The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. With Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
We're still fooling with our sound here.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear some? Can you hear?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mic check.
Yeah, it wasn't the mic check.
It was the headphones.
It was the headphone check. It's either too loud or too soft, you know? We're like Goldilocks. All righty. So, happy Mother's Day. For those of you listening on Mother's Day, we air Sundays here at KCNR Studios in Northern California, up in Redding. From noon to 2. That would be Pacific time for those of you that are detail-oriented. And we have a chat room. What?
For those of you on the West Coast that actually want to catch us on time.
Well, which is hard enough for us to do. I don't expect other people to do it.
Yeah, really.
No, it was kind of funny. I told somebody, we're in California, so it's noon to 2. And they go, is that Pacific time?
Crap. No.
Yes, it's Pacific time, you goofball. No,
it's Alaska time.
And then you can always catch us commercial-free on the East Coast. They re-air our program on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network that comes out on WNJC in Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore. That is Saturdays from 2:30 to 4. So they chop out all the commercials and they stuff the whole show into an hour and a half, which is kind of fun. Then you also have the option of a phone number. So if you have people who want to listen to the program but don't have computer access that is fast enough to stream audio, they can always listen on the phone, 832-999-1199. And that is provided by the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. So all of their programming streams in a big giant loop. So that phone number always has conservative programming happening. So if you have 3 minutes or, you know, you got a speakerphone in your vehicle, something like that, and you'd like to listen, it is 832-999-1199. Our webpage is wethepeopleradio.us. There you can get phone numbers for us. You can, you can do all sorts of stuff. You could follow programming back to, geez Louise, I don't know, 2010 or something.
1847.
Don't you have a little song? Isn't there a little song you could sing for us? yeah, what is that one you always sing me?
The war had just begun. Oh, I forgot the 1941.
Oh my gosh, you're usually really good on that.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All I know is it's a little song. I don't really know which one it is. So
just
let's
like sing the Bismarck?
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know where that came
you and
from.
Bob deserve each other.
Johnny Horton.
Yeah. Hey,
Johnny
you guys
Horton.
Gave me the wrong information. I updated the website to have the right link. You guys told me it was the 8th.
It is the 8th.
But it doesn't come up the 8th.
No,
it's not coming up properly. So those of you online, just click the button for next week. You'll
Our
get the right
will
show.
We'll have to call back. We have to have next week's guest on again.
We'll have to wait a week.
Yeah. Stand by.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing's easy, you know, especially when you get back late at night. Sorry. I was very tardy this morning coming back from visiting my mom. But that was good. Let's see.
Okay, well, now when you click on next week, you get May 15th, so that would be correct.
For Lord's sake, what is happening?
Well, we don't really care.
I don't know.
Point.
Something funky's going on, but I'll fix it. It'll get sorted out. So we have Ambassador Francis Rooney with us. He was U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, a.k.a. the Vatican, from 2005 to 2008. He was appointed by President George W. Bush and is the author of a book called The Global Vatican, which provides an inside look at the Catholic Church, world politics, and the extraordinary relationship between the U.S. and the Holy See. We have had the ambassador on before. We always get really good updates on what's going on out in the big world. Since
we great information.
Since we spend loads of time looking myopically at, land use issues and other odd things. So it's kind of nice to broaden our scope. And kind of fired up you were able to join us on Mother's Day. Hi, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you for having me on. It's a treat to be on your show. And
well, it's usually fun anyway.
Compliment.
We pay all our guests in fun.
You never know what you're going to get.
That's our currency. It's goofing
off. Land use issues are important.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, there's no shortage if you live out here in the West. So we try really hard to educate our urban brethren, as a constituent phoned me last week and informed me that he was tired of being controlled by the city-its. So apparently those were idiots who live in the city. So no slight on the city-its, but yes, we should educate everybody on what's going on. Because, you know, people, I don't know if people really realize how much their private property is tied, their private property rights are tied to what's happening in some of our public lands, besides the fact that they're paying for it, which should alarm them. So what's going on in your world?
Well, I've been enjoying the reaction to the fact that Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee.
And that has been a fun little ride, hasn't it?
It's very interesting to watch people taking different positions, some of which make some sense and some of which I just don't understand at all. And, you know, it's almost like denial of reality.
Yeah, there's lots of that going on, isn't there?
Well, no, the last time you know, when you were involved in the Bush era, the public wasn't quite as engaged as they are now.
Well, I think social media's had a lot to do with that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And then I think people felt a little bit like things were out of control, and, you know, you had movements like the Tea Party and whatnot that kind of brought people out of their, you know, out of their work. And then the economy melted down, so we all had more time.
You know, one thing that's frustrating me a lot is, grant you, Mr. Trump's language is brutish and unnuanced and overly broad. But if you go beyond the language and you think, okay, what's the concept the guy's exploiting here? What concept is he trying to pursue? And what's motivating the people that are behind him? There's not that much difference between what Donald Trump is supporting in a general sense and what I worked on with Jeb Bush, okay? Things that are important to fix the problems that we face in this country, the problems that wage earners face, that we face from a tax point of view and an investment point of view, that we face from the point of view of capital that's abroad that needs to come back here.
Yeah, was that a problem that you guys were looking at before?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Trump's tax plan, according to the New York Post, is what I read of the details of it, is not a whole lot different than what Jeb proposed. He proposed a very interesting thing, and Trump and Jeb were the only two people that did it, where they said just deduct all capital expenditures in the year that you make them. You don't have to have this 5-year, 10-year depreciation. Just you make a capital expenditure, you just deduct it, and you have your net operating loss carried forward. And what it does, it stimulates investment in property, plant, and equipment. They do that in Mexico, and it works very well. So, I mean, and then he talked about reducing the corporate tax rates. Jeb did not have as low of rates as Trump. Trump's rates are maybe a little too low, create too big a deficit. And both of them come out, they say, let's offer some kind of one-time tax payment of a lower amount to entice the multinationals to bring their money back home. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. And who complains about that?
Well, I guess Paul Ryan.
You know, it's what's your
gotta
take
have somebody,
on,
don't you?
What's your take on the GOP's lack of interest in Trump? I mean, he just
according
seems,
to the media.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I don't know. Is
it's
it
not everybody?
To the media, it just seems like they're very concerned about him taking the leadership role. Why? What do you think?
Well, I think. From the perspective of Paul Ryan and sitting members of the Congress, there's a strong element of give us some window, some language that we can use to go out to our right-wing districts, of which there are way too many that aren't contested enough, and so that we don't get attacked from the right. So I think part of Paul Ryan's motive is to say, I'm not for Trump yet, and let's see what he does to give some cover to people running in districts that they don't want to see some guy come at them from the right. And that happens a lot in the Republican Party right now.
Hmm. Yeah, and okay, so because you're in Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you dealt with Did you, were you there when Jeb Bush was a governor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you were involved, I was just guessing by what you said earlier, you were involved a little bit with his presidential campaign?
Deeply.
Deeply involved with his presidential campaign. Yeah. Okay, so
and
these...
I think he would have made a fantastic president because he has the sentiments of Donald Trump without the unnuanced language.
Well, that's what I was going to say. From a personality standpoint, you couldn't split it any harder. You know, just...
No, they're totally different people.
So what else did they have in common, just out of curiosity?
I don't think they have anything in common other than...
No, I meant like policy-wise.
Oh, policy-wise? Well, look, Trump says we have to deal with the impact of globalization and technological change, the anger and frustration that many middle-class and wage-earning people in the country feel about stagnant wages and maybe not enough good jobs. Jeb has plans for that. And their plans are tactile and detailed. And they involve things like job training. They involve things like tax incentives for companies that like to come back here and not go to Mexico or go to Singapore and things like that. I think that if Trump would read what Jeb wrote, it would be very much in sync with some of the broad concepts that he's elaborated.
That's such a funny idea, and I think most people would find
think
that.
Think about two other things. Two other things come to mind are welfare. Welfare, before Gingrich and Clinton struck the workfare deal, welfare had no requirement about work. They created something in the mid-90s called workfare. Well, that's all been undercut and eliminated now, okay? So one thing, we need to put the workfare back in welfare. Not a rocket science idea. We're not inventing some kind of new metal. We're just saying if people are going to get benefits, they ought to be looking for work.
I think I've heard that from a lot of folks that, you know, they're on public assistance, but they don't have to do anything or even appear to do anything to earn it. It's just free money.
I think that has something to do with this labor force participation rate.
Oh, yeah, that inconvenient thing that keeps messing up how many people are unemployed.
Right. If you're getting $30,000 a year from the government, then you don't need to participate in the labor force. You know, food stamps are like four times as many people are using food stamps right now as were when President Obama took office. Now, I don't think the economics of the recession and the recovery justify that.
No, it was interesting. I was speaking with a lady yesterday whose son is 50, so he's a grown-up, had same job for, I don't know, 13, 14 years, and then did something stupid and got himself fired. And was on unemployment for, I think she said, 2.5 years. And she just was so bugged because she, you know, she said, what are you going to do? Your resume is going to have a 2.5 year gap. They're going to think you're in prison. Yeah, you know, you can't just sit around and collect.
I typically look for the 5 year.
Yeah, five years.
Five-year gap.
Kind of a hot tip. But yeah, you know, he wasn't even trying. He was making enough money to pay what bills he had. And he had all his time free, so he was taking it as a giant life break.
Yeah, and you know, the liberal media always wants to portray this as a racial divide, and it's not at all, okay?
No.
As Charles Murray's written in his book, Coming Apart, it has nothing to do with race, gender, creed, color, nothing. It has to do with government benefits being set at a level of accessibility and dollars that... For people that are kind of on the edge, they just say, well, why bother? Go work. And we have to stop that.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's close, they're going to take the free money. It's just amazing. I mean, I spent 3 years trying to hire somebody for a position at our place of business, and I can't tell you how many times I heard, I make more than that on unemployment, or I make more than that on public aid. I get free medical. I get free this, free that. And when he adds it all up, he's making 20, 25 bucks an hour. And they won't even look at a job if it doesn't start for at least that. There's a problem there.
There is. I mean, look at all the yards that get cut, dishes that get washed, and feedlots and butchers and things that are basically populated by illegal aliens or newly immigrant Hispanics. because a lot of Americans don't want to do that work.
No. No, and they come here and they look at jobs like that and go, holy cow, that's more money than I've made for forever in my country. I'll gladly take that job. And they work hard. They do a good job. And a lot of times they end up moving up into something better. But so many folks that were raised here, I don't want to say they're spoiled, but
they're spoiled.
They're spoiled.
Yeah, I want $15 an hour for,
I'm worth it.
Doing some entry level.
Yeah, I have a college degree and I need $25 an hour to pay for that degree. Well, you don't start there. And I think that's the big problem with our society today is we have taught our children, you know, you go to school and get an education and you're going to get a good job and you're going to start at the top. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I remember one time my wife and I, Kathleen, were having dinner with Thomas Sowell, the brilliant black economist.
Yeah.
And he said, we have raised a generation of children to think they're the best, and unfortunately they do.
Yes. Isn't that true? They walk into an interview, and the first thing out of their mouth is, what's the benefits? That's the wrong question.
They're starting to call it the everybody gets a ribbon at the swim meet mentality.
Everybody gets a trophy.
But they forgot to learn how to swim.
I've got a fun story about that. But we have to take a really quick break. Otherwise, the whole hour will be behind yet again, which is kind of a hallmark of this program. We start late, finish late, all that. We are chatting with former Ambassador Francis Rooney. He's always going to be Ambassador Rooney to us. The former thing's just annoying. He was ambassador to the Vatican. Very interesting. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have all sorts of great information and links to his book, The Global Vatican. We'll be right back. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them? Shift work, hard work, tired body, a blue collar shirt and a baseball cap, union made. He's hot, sweat drops round the clock. The door never locks and the noise never stops. Night or day, working 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. Yeah, I worked all those shifts. I kind of like shift work. It was fun. Late at night, everybody had to be up because you were working. Shift
nights for sleeping.
Nights for driving all night. That's what it was last night. So, Ambassador, I had a friend whose dad, or, you know, husband, the kids' dad just hated that everybody gets a trophy thing. So they're on their way back from some soccer thing, and kids are in the back seat, and I don't know, they're like 8, 9, 10, something like that. And the dad's like, oh, you got a trophy. He just went to pick them up. Oh, you got a trophy. Great. Did you guys win? No. No, we lost. Everybody got a trophy. He goes, oh, let me see that trophy. Rolls the window down and heaves the trophy out the window.
Wow.
The kid starts crying. He goes, a trophy wasn't worth anything. Wait till you win. That's a trophy worth saving.
But she agreed with it. The kid kind of came around.
Well, after a while, it was kind of like, hey, you're kind of right. Everybody did get the same one. What was great about winning, you know? But I kind of laughed. As a country, we kind of need to roll the window down and, you know, throw the trophy out the window. It's time.
On the one hand, Thomas Hobbes said, life is nasty, brutish, and short. On the other hand, we have the happy song. We're somewhere in the middle of the United States right now, but skewed towards the happy song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then reality hits, and all of a sudden, all our kids are in therapy.
Well, then you have to have a safe space.
Because now we have microaggression. It impedes their ability to make critical judgments that are important for the future of our country and for them and their kids.
Oh, absolutely. Then they never had to make a choice that really mattered, that really affected anything that they did in the future. I mean, when we grew up, you made choices right or wrong. You made the choice. and some of them didn't really get the result you were looking for.
No, and I remember my father pointing out that it was my choice that got me there. I remember we had long talks about that.
Yeah.
How if I would have made different choices, different things would have happened. And, I'm not sure how much of that is actually happening. You know, I was having a little discussion with somebody on our chat room at the same time we're doing all this. And, you know, I was told, I wasn't involved in the federal policy stuff back during the Bush era, but I was told that back during that time, Congress defunded a bunch of things, kind of rolled back some of the control of the agencies and things like that, and starved it for money, which stopped a lot of the bad things that were happening during the Clinton era. The problem was they didn't actually change the law. So as soon as Obama came in, added money right back to it, and as soon as it was funded, poof, all the bad policies were back up and running. Do you have any, you know, have you seen any of that? You know, did you see any of that when you were there?
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, the Bush administration had an agenda, and it was a good agenda that was the kind of agenda that will build a stronger America for the long run. But it's a lot easier to roll back executive orders and then just not fund and not execute programs than it is to go back to Congress and say, eliminate this, eliminate that. That would have been the hard blocking and tackling, which would have been better because it would have institutionalized the change instead of create a short-term 8-year window. Now we're back right where we are. And I think that's a big problem with government generally, that everybody up there, these career politicians, are acting in terms of their own narrow interest and taking the easy way out. And no one wants to confront the fundamental long-term needs of the country. No wonder Trump's Trump.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, in the back of people's minds, they're hoping, you know, you're fired is something that we start hearing a lot. You know, all joking aside about the reality show, obviously the guy's not afraid to fire people, and the government has become, you know, the executive branch has become insanely bloated.
Yeah, and George W. had plenty of time during the administration when he had the Congress as well. He could have just cobbed all that junk out. But you get this insidious stuff, okay? Even Republicans, they'll say, oh, we don't want to do that. That'll hurt us here or hurt us there, and all the back-scratching things. And one good example of it is the Ex-Im Bank.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with renewing the stupid Ex-Im Bank, okay?
Yes.
Most of the money that the Ex-Im Bank lends goes to Boeing and their sub-assembly suppliers. I would much rather say, we'll protect Boeing. We'll put a surcharge on any Airbus product or whatever that comes into this country. But it's much better to target the cost to the specific people like Airbus than make all of America pay for that.
Yeah. Because I don't think most people understand what Ex-Im Bank does or is. And so when the fight comes up, I don't think people weigh in, really.
And I think there's an element of what Trump's saying in this, that, okay, let's say, okay, Boeing says, I can't sell jets in Europe without Ex-Im Bank subsidized interest. We say, oh, yes, you can. We're just going to put a little tariff or some other kinds of limitations on what Airbus can do to make sure the playing field's leveled if Europe offers a competing subsidy. So then you go to the European people and say, don't offer a subsidy or we're going to go after you. So then the whole competitive field becomes laid back to normal competition without subsidies on either side.
And so what do you see, happening in the, you know, in a Trump, administration?
I think there's some elements of what the guy's saying that could work that way. You know, subsidies and tariffs become a beggar than neighbor deal. You know, I do one, you do one, all that. And the better way is to sit back and say, free competition, we won't give subsidized rates for Boeing, you don't give subsidized rates for Airbus. If you do, we're going to put a tariff on you. But if you don't, we won't. Everybody plays on an equal field. Boeing doesn't get American corporate welfare. Airbus doesn't get European corporate welfare. Then people like you and I don't have to pay for Boeing to compete with Airbus, which I really is not my fight.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't –
Well, that's so true with so many corporations.
Yeah, at some point, we have to stop paying for all of it.
Exactly. You got to stand on your own 2 feet. I mean, that's the way it's always been until the government stepped in and decided to start picking winners and losers.
Yeah, but, you know, Boeing comes in to these congressmen who don't know anything, they've never had a job, they've never made a payroll, and say, oh, it's going to cost jobs in your district. And the congressman's got the best job he's ever had in his life and says, oh, my gosh, jobs in my district. Yes, I'm for the Ex-Im Bank. Instead of saying, no, Boeing, we're going to craft a better program. We're not going to make all of America subsidize you. We're going to go after the people that are grieving you, that are bothering you unfairly. Yeah. And that happens all through the government. Boeing's just an example.
Yeah, and it didn't, if I remember right, it didn't pass in the House, and it looked like it was dead, and then I think the Senate revived it again.
Yeah, and then the House caved.
And then, a bunch of people in the House caved in. Brutal. Majorities are only as good as
well. I think if Trump gets in there, all eyes of the world will be watching what Congress does to support what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, true.
And it's then we'll see who's going to stay in office and who isn't, because I think people are really tuned in right now and they want to see the change, a lot of the change that he's talking about. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that can't stand the guy, but you know, his core message, I think, is something that resonates with the majority of people. I mean, when they say, oh, he hasn't got a chance against Hillary, I disagree with that. I think people are going to be surprised. I really do.
Well, first, I think we're going to see him become a little more nuanced in some of his statements.
Oh, he can do that
now. If he were more nuanced, going back to what we talked about earlier, if he were more nuanced, he wouldn't be that much different than Jeb Bush. He just has a delivery that excites people in a different manner than Jeb did.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well,
we're starting to see him tone it down a little bit already.
But, sure. Yeah. Well, when the left starts calling you a racist, a bigot, and a hater, you know you're on the right track.
Right. But he has no fuse for that stuff. I mean, if they attack him, his first instinct is to attack back. There's no diplomacy there.
You know, see, one thing that I keep thinking about so much, and I shouldn't, but it really keeps me up at night. Our country was founded by people who didn't need the job, didn't want the job, and gave their entire fortune to create the country. None of those three conditions apply to most of the elected officials that we have right now.
Right. And look at how much it's cost him to run this campaign. His own money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he's the closest thing to one of those founding fathers we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
It's really hard because you have, I mean, if you think about it, we've got 535 people in there, and how many do we hear from on a regular basis? Six?
Right.
Yeah. Not very many.
Seven.
Not
and so many. They become everyone.
Which is another thing. I think we need a national referendum on term limits. This country was never thought about as a place with a political elite that would be in office for a long time. In fact, we fought a war to fight against people that were just like that. But now we've got it ourselves.
Yeah, except people keep electing them. I mean, they have the option. Geez, in the House, they have a shot at them every 2 years.
They have the option, and there may be other ways to create more impediments to that, but I'd like to see term limits. I think they should know when they go in, it's a temporary job, you're here to serve the people, it's not about you, and you're going to do it for 5-10 years, and you're going to let someone else try it.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we do that, the other thing, because what we see in California is we have term limits out here, and the backlash of that is that the bureaucrats run the state. Because the legislators are all too new. They don't have enough history.
Well, they don't know how the system works.
So
they think they have the basics, but they don't know the ins and outs of how the whole system works. And by the time they get their finger on it and figure out what's going on, they're out. And
so a lot of the new
bureaucrats
guys
are in there.
Yeah, they're in for 30 years.
For decades.
Yeah. So a lot of the new guys go.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go to committee or whatever. And who's running the I was speaking with a one of our state senators at this I don't know, some event or something, and he represents just south of us. But he was on the Board of Prison Terms for like 15 years, and prior to that he was a senator. So because of the term limit rules, blah, 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 he was able to run again. So he's been around the California State Capitol for a long time. Conservative guy, smart guy, really hard worker. And we had this conversation about term limits. And he said, he was livid just about what was going on down there. He said, I go to committee meetings and the staff of the committee and the bureaucrats from the agencies are running these meetings because the legislators don't have enough information because they just got there. Because I'm the only one who's got really any institutional knowledge in any of these committees. And these guys have no idea how these guys are running them around by the nose.
Well, like, there's two points I would say. First of all, you need smarter people running for office.
Well, there's
that aren't going to get ballyhooed and kowtow to some bureaucrat.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The other thing is the bureaucrats need to know that they are in a precarious living environment, that they don't have such civil service protection. Because they work for the elected officials who represent the people.
Yeah. See, and,
They're all union, though, well, so you got to be careful there.
They work for the executive
branch. That's a problem. It's ridiculous.
It's a huge problem.
So you're saying that the bureaucracy has basically more, they have all this stability in their work environment.
Big time.
Where they can take huge risks in confronting their elected bosses.
Yep. Well, I'll give you a great example at the federal level. An amendment went in. From our congressman here to an appropriations for the Army Corps of Engineers. Everybody bitches about how the laws are too long, too big, you got to be an attorney. He's a farmer. It was a one-sentence amendment. It said that the Army Corps of Engineers was not allowed to expend resources, money, time, et cetera, to regulate farming because somehow the Army Corps of Engineers thinks they're in charge of farming now. So here's a one-sentence amendment. Passes through appropriations, and they're still all over the farmers here in Northern California. So they call the Army Corps in, sit them down, and said, hey, look, guys, here's the one-sentence amendment that's been signed by the president. You are not allowed to regulate farming. You want to know what they said? That's not the way we read that. That's not the way we read that.
And that's the tyranny of the bureaucracy.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, because the only person to rein them in is the executive branch. The legislature doesn't get to make the laws and carry them out.
That's true. And the executive branch that doesn't want to enforce the laws.
Exactly.
Is a bad deal. So we've had Richard Nixon that didn't want to do that, and we have Barack Obama that didn't want to do that.
Well, yeah. Obama's taking it to a whole new level, though.
Because the attorney, the attorney general's like, what broken law? We better take a – speaking of laws, we better take a quick break. I felt Bob being despondent over there. He's like, God, she's doing it again. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here speaking with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He has written a terrific book called The Global Vatican. You can find all that information online. See you in 2 minutes. Exactly. Why can't we just all get along?
Why can't we all just get along?
That's my mom. I went down to visit her yesterday, and my uncle was there. He's kind of a right winger. Kind of a right winger. And so my mom said, all right, I have to go get my hair cut. When I come back in an hour, we're not talking about any more politics. You get it out of your system right now. How's that for...
She threw down on you.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. She apparently they talked about Hillary the day before, and my uncle clued her into all the crimes Hillary's been committing, and my mom got a terrible stomach ache, and they had to stop talking about it.
Her idol.
I love her. No, she doesn't even like Hillary, but she really hates Mr. Trump. What do you think about that, Ambassador? The people who maybe would have crossed over if we had somebody who maybe wasn't a flamethrower?
I think the analogy is like when you go to the ophthalmologist. Better this way, better this way.
Is it one or
I think
two?
If you do that a couple of times, you get clearer vision.
That's a good theory, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. Either that or it's not happening fast enough. Because we just keep slipping down the rabbit hole further and further and further. And these agencies are just wiping us out.
Yeah, but Bernie's drawing a crowd. What's up with that?
Well, I
think he's tapping some things on the left wing side and some of the younger people that Trump's tapping from more of the working people. There's a lot of uncertainty and frustration out there about different things. I'm more worried about these young people not understanding about free enterprise and capitalism and being so quick to flock onto this clown than anything in the whole world. I mean, they were raised in an era of good times. Everybody's been getting these ribbons for a long time, and they have no clue about how that bread gets made.
No, you're right. But, you know, I did hear kind of an interesting statistic the other day that the people that Bernie is attracting is the younger crowd. Boy, if you look at the people that are surrounding him at some of these rallies, they look like they're 10 years old. But that demographic doesn't show up to vote. They do everything but actually go in and pull the lever, which is kind of interesting. Yeah.
But he's winning in these states in the primary.
Yeah. I don't know.
Bill now.
The scary thing to me is that what it reflects about their lack of understanding of what is the fundamental principle of our country, what's made our country great, to flock to this self-avowed socialist who has no decent idea to create any kind of business or free enterprise or private capital at all. He just wants the government to take over everything. It's really scary that young people would even listen to that.
Well, they can relate to him because weren't you telling me that he never had a job and was actually on welfare before
wasn't he on welfare when he first started his career? He's never had a real job.
Well, he's an expert
he
on
no idea.
Social programs. You've been there.
And so... In some ways, I think it's incumbent on us to do a better job of explaining to these young people how the United States has gotten to be where it is and what the United States can offer them. And it's not socialism, and it's not the government telling us what to do about everything, and the 80,000 pages of regulations that the Obama administration's put in place. It's about empowering people to achieve their full potential.
Yeah, and then you have the other ones. Shoot, I have a niece graduating from Texas Christian with a double major in 3 years. I've got a nephew who's graduating graduated with a double major in 4. They're getting in, out. I've got another one graduated from Westmont a couple of years ago. He's down in L.A., started his own business. He's got some swank apartment down there. He's 20. And got an apartment for his brother, and so they're going to go into business there. And the other brother is in China making a deal with some manufacturer on a clothing line that he created for the junior colleges. He's 19, and I'm thinking these guys are going to run the world one day.
Well, they're out there. I mean, that's the thing is there are young folks out there that understand the system. They're smart. And
they're motivated.
They're motivated. You know, I think so many of the young folks now
have... Their parents aren't idiots either, so that helps.
That's a big part of it. I think they grew up, everything was handed to them, and now they have to go out and make it on their own, and they're looking for somebody to hand it to them. And it isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen.
What do you see as the biggest change that'll... I mean, if you had to, like, be a prognosticator, and you were just going to say, okay, Trump's president next week, what do you think changes first?
I think we need to see a little more of how he fleshes out what he's for. But if he did what he said, I think he would focus on the free trade stuff and figuring out how to make sure that the wages and incomes grow. If he does that, then he's going to go back to some of these fundamental policies of changing welfare, changing food stamps, changing the tax code, getting rid of regulations that Obama's put in place, to restore America to kind of a Reagan-esque time when people could start businesses and flourish and raise their families. That's what I hope he does.
Do you really think it would take that much to turn it around? I mean, just with the things that you just mentioned there, if somebody could come in and do that in a four-year period of time, do you think that's possible with as messed up as it is right now?
Yeah, Reagan did it. Reagan came in and said everything Jimmy Carter did was wrong, except deregulating the airlines. And he cut taxes, he cut regulations, he faced down the air traffic controllers, which was a warning shot across the bow to every other union. There's so many things that Obama's done by executive order that the new president, if he's a Republican, can stop right away, like and appoint a good NLRB and stop the increased easiness to get union elections and all that kind of stuff. Stop the executive orders about wage and hour changes, you know, when someone's called a manager versus an hourly worker for overtime. I mean, there's so many things all through the system that Obama's done by executive order that just make it more costly to run a business.
And the next president, as far as these executive orders go, he has every right and ability to reverse those executive orders, doesn't he?
Yeah, if we get a Republican in there, he'll do it. I think Trump would do it. I mean, how about this ridiculous one that if in the event of a 100-year flood, water from somewhere could communicate with a navigable piece of water, then the place where that water would be coming from in the event of a 100-year flood is considered a navigable waterway. So that means every farmer's tank and pond could considerably, if it's anywhere near a river, it becomes a navigable waterway. You could just stop that first afternoon.
Yeah, and that is that's a great example of a ridiculous law.
Oh, yeah. Deal with that all the time.
More control. Less, you know, less people on the land. It gets back to that whole thing. That's what they're doing. No, we need somebody that can go in and will go in and reverse. If he just reversed some of these executive orders, boy, what a difference that would make pretty quickly.
Which is why I don't understand why someone's saying I'd rather have Hillary Clinton than him.
Oh, yeah, because she'll do it, won't she?
She won't reverse any. Yeah, right.
Not one.
She'll get right on that.
She'll amp them up.
She will put on her orange Mao jacket and, uh-huh, and bust out her pen and go make that.
That's right.
Yeah, no, not happen. Well, just the fact that they trashed the White House and broke things and stole things when they left last time should,
the good news is
preclude
her if she's elected, maybe she'll bring some of that stuff back.
Oh, there you go. Know? Well, I didn't think of
redecorate.
That. Redecorate. What was I thinking?
Yeah, re-gift it.
Oh, it's
they have a track record of crookedness and corruption and
I think with
that record,
my mom actually
said she has a lot of experience. I was like, Mom, what?
But see, I think that a lot of that stuff now is fair game for Trump. Now that he can focus on her and not 16 other candidates, he can turn his guns on her. And I heard the other day that they said that it could really get heated up now that. Trump can turn his guns on Hillary.
Well, and don't forget, there's that other little piece of the puzzle that just for the heck of it, if she was to be the nominee, which of course she will be, if they indicted her after that, they could parachute in somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of a bit of a specter because I fear that they might parachute Biden in.
Yep.
And he would be a much more rational candidate than she is.
Right. Well, he didn't have to. We had somebody on a few months ago that lined us out on the rules and how that would actually happen. If they indicted her and she was taken out of the race prior to being the nominee, then they get Bernie because he's the only guy qualified in all 50 states. But if they wait till after she's the nominee, she falls through the trapdoor, then
they can put anybody in there.
They can put anybody in there.
Right. And I think they're waiting Bernie out. And so when Bernie says, I'm fighting to the last vote, he's saying, I'm going to make it real hard on you guys to dump me.
Yeah, yeah. Don't try to break up with me. I'll break up with you first.
Well, it didn't work with Kasich, so I don't know.
Oh, God, yeah. That guy.
Yeah, he was a diehard, wasn't he?
Jeez Louise.
He hung in there just long enough maybe to become VP. Who knows?
The water in Ohio is just laced with something. We have to take one more really quick break here before the top of the hour. We're chatting with Ambassador Francis Rumi, who has joined us on Mother's Day. Thank you so much. Take a little time out from the family. You can find out all his information online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. You gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices. Sit on the scene. Giving up all around me. Bases full of pain.
All right, Mr. Ambassador, what did we, what didn't we cover? We have like 3 minutes.
Let's get back on track here.
No, I mean, you know, you have a different vantage point and a different history, obviously, than we do. So, you know, you've been in an administration before that was a really big change from, were you there the first 4 years?
First 4 years, I did a lot of things for George Bush, but I wasn't in a full-time post.
Okay.
I got to do several very discreet missions for him in Central America and Latin America, and was involved in several things that he did there.
Cool. So when you start out in an administration that's following up on one that, you know, that folks on our side of the line think is a disaster, is it just like all hands on deck?
Sure. I mean, you know, you come in with a policy agenda that you want to try to accomplish and change things. And you're plugging holes in the dike, you know, and it's going to be this way now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hopefully we'll get a Republican in there. I guess it's going to be Donald Trump. And we need to start with all these executive orders and then start to work through the National Labor Relations Board and the potential judicial appointments and all the other things. I mean, I wonder what people are thinking. They're talking about Hillary versus him. I just have real trouble getting my arms around thinking that she would be any way better than him, in terms of these fundamental lifestyle changing appointments and direction of the government.
Yeah. Cause well, just the Supreme Court alone should.
Yeah.
Well, then there are a lot of people who think that, you know, he might be just like her and that he's masquerading as a Republican. There's that whole thing, which is a total can of worms. But if he does what he says, we might be able to right the ship, huh?
Yeah, so all you guys out there, if you want to use the ladies' room, you better get on it, because that might be going away, too.
We chatted about the bathroom bill last week. Good Lord, it never ends.
It doesn't end.
Well, Ambassador Rooney, we really appreciate you spending some of your afternoon with us. And hope you have a super day, and come back and give us your thoughts.
Oh, I think, yeah, as this heats up, we definitely got to have you back.
Yeah, we need your insight. You've done this before.
I hope you all have a great Mother's Day, and appreciate the chance to be on your show again. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks a ton. All right, folks, you ought to send this interview to your friends. It was kind of fun. Gives you something to think about. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back in 5 minutes.